I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So I'm sorry for starting the show, lads, by taking a look ahead to next year when we haven't even got this year inter-county season over yet. We're still in county final mode. But Colin Keyes had a piece in The Independent and like he'd have his own leaks in the GAA because it looks like there's not going to be that special Congress this year to try and fix the structure for next year. So it looks like they're going to go ahead with the same season as this season. But because this season is going to end in December, next season has to start a bit later. So I thought it was interesting what the plan for the National League is that like every division of eight teams looks like it'll be broke up into two groups of four. And instead of having seven league games, you will have three league games. Isn't that right? And then the top teams in the smaller four round robins will make the knockout stages. So your league might start potentially in March or something like that. So like, I mean, and then you'll get into inter-county season. The April for clubs looks like it'll be gone. And it looks like obviously the All-Ireland final might finish a bit earlier and we'll have our split season, Conan. So again, it's next year. We've more important things probably to worry about, but I still thought it is interesting that these decisions have to be made sooner rather than later.
Yeah, it's probably fair enough that they're looking to not implement something for next year, considering like every sport's going to have condensed seasons because of what's happened. And like, to be honest, I'd say a lot of managers will be delighted. Like, you know, if you're having a shorter league and it's running straight into the championship, like that's way better than stopping for April for clubs, despite having a full league, you know, so it gives them a bit of momentum. But I think the GAA could have used this momentum that's happening now. Like, there is a big opportunity, the way the seasons have been sort of flipped on their heads and like changed just drastically because they had to be done. Could have used that now to actually look at a structure for 2022 or whatever. Like if Congress passes like in February, like the normal Congress, and we haven't implemented a new structure for the club and inter-county seasons working together, then that's a big, big miss. And it's going to be hard to bring that up again if you're not going to bring it up now after all this. Like, this is the time to
do. Yeah, but I suppose it is, though, a situation where like they will practice having the season start in March. They will practice ending it in July. They will practice the club season getting a full run until the end of the year. You know what I mean? There are things that they will be practicing next year as well.
Yeah, no, you're right. But I just think just for a long-term thing, like if we're knocking in 2022 with a new season, then like we've really balls up. Imagine going back to the way it was in 2022. Like, and I do think that this is the time. If it is a special Congress that again is not being implemented until the year after, then that's fine. But let's talk about it now.
Yeah. I think this management committee should just stay in charge the whole time, Connor. So then we wouldn't have to worry about these things getting through Congress. You just have a management committee that decides on the new structure, and there you go. Forget this. democracy, which is not democracy anyways in Congress, as we know.
Well, it hasn't really worked up to this point for a lot of reasons anyway. But I would have thought that, and maybe I'm getting the kind of how it's going to be implemented wrong, but I thought there was still scope to implement, you know, big change based on the split season in 2022, even allowing for the fact that next year is going to be disrupted. Like when I was reading, I was kind of like, okay, that's, you know, that's thinking fairly long ahead. But then at the same time, this roadmap that everybody is going off at the moment is meant to govern the various restrictions for the next 6 to 9 months, which would be stretching into March of next year anyway. So it makes sense for the GAA to kind of to plan for this condensed season. But then I would have thought that, as you said earlier on, because they're practicing a season beginning in March, because they're practicing a split season, then if everyone was to see that was to work next year, that we could look at implementing that on a more permanent basis in 2022.
Yeah.
That would have been my hope for it anyway. But apart from that, the only thing about the like three league games sounds like very little. But the only thing I was thinking is, like, if you have two groups of four, especially if relegation is a factor, I didn't see that outlined in Colin Keyes's report, whether relegation would be factored into it as usual, but it might lead to a more cutthroat competition in March than, even though the league is quite a good competition as it already is.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Look, we know the split season probably is the way forward. I think that's what we're going to see in future. Colm Kavanagh retired this week. Sean's brother, Colm Kavanagh. I think he's finally cast that over. He's coming up in part two, so stay tuned for that. I'm going to ask him about that. I have to admit, Conan, like, for I'd say the first 5 or 6 years of Colm Kavanagh's career, for me he was Sean's brother. He wasn't Colm Kavanagh.
Like, he's probably one of for all that Mickey Hart's done, like, Colm Kavanagh and his progress has been one of his great sort of triumphs. Yeah. Because when he came in, like, yeah, he was sort of like an erratic midfielder. He didn't really know what he was going to do. He brought a bit of energy when he played half forward, but Mickey Hart transformed him into a really consistent and really dependable player, one of the most consistent in Ireland, considering what he was bringing.
But this is one thing I'm going to ask Colm, because I'm very interested in this. My theory on this is Colm Kavanagh created that position for himself. My theory on this is Mickey Hart didn't tell Colm Kavanagh to do that. Colm Kavanagh just started doing it. Now, I could be completely wrong. We'll find out. I have not that interview done before now. I promise you. I promise you on that. But I am interested to see. I think he just used his own brain there, Connor. And, like, I mean, they were playing a defensive style, so he went back into the fullback line. And then it kind of evolved where he'd literally, if they didn't win the kick out, he'd get back into that position. Now, maybe when he started at Mickey Hart had a chat with him about it, I think it was all Colm Kavanagh. I could be wrong.
Yeah, no, he definitely had that defensive inclination when he was playing wing forward. I think he's spoken about this before. You're going to ask him about it, so you'll know more in a little while. But I think he's spoken about that he had that natural defensive tendency, so it suited him to kind of to get back into that position. And the way Tyrone were playing to the early 2010s when he started doing it, they probably would have been far more defensive, so their style naturally lended to that anyway. But maybe what I would say is that between the two of them then, if you're going to give Mickey Hart any credit, they probably then, the two of them, while Kavanagh identified it, the two of them identified that position where he manned the edge of the square. Like, for a while, you know, for that Tyrone team, he used to stand on the edge of the square. He was a brilliant reader of the game. And not only that, when he did snuff out the danger, he was like a bear in the tackle as well and was able to strip opponents. So maybe that was the redefining of that position was something between Colm Kavanagh and Mickey Hart. But I don't think Mickey Hart can claim responsibility for saying, here's a forward, we're going to get him back playing defence. I think, as you said, Colm Kavanagh would have had a lot to do with kind of initiating that move himself.
Yeah, and definitely going to ask him about winning an All-Star as a fullback and see what he thinks of that, which is definitely a strange one. Peter Kelly, Kildare, All-Star, and Darren Daly, 7-time All-Ireland winner, two more players retiring. Strange time to retire. There's no doubt about that. Like, Jesus, like, you've only got another couple of months and only one or two games. Tyrone are playing Donegal in Ballybuffet. Why would you not want to play that? Listen, I'm saying things I'm going to be saying to Colm very soon. Ashley Maloney's not happy. You were talking to her, Conan. A situation in Tipperary. Be honest with you, this is getting a lot more traction than it probably would if it was in the men's game, because if we're being honest, one is a junior hurling game and the other is a senior football game. And what county is junior competitions showing that much respect? Probably not that many, if we're being honest. The problem here is that this junior camogie game and the senior football game, which have two different organisations running them, they have been fixed for the same weekend. And Ashley Maloney's club has 10 dual players. I'm thinking of Cahir Healy when I read that. The Cahir club, they're looking at two games. They have 10 dual players, so they have to play two county finals in 26 hours. I see a lot of people talking about equality and all this kind of stuff, Conan. I think it's nothing to do with equality. This is bad administration, not putting players first, and now it looks like the Camogie Association don't want to budge.
Yeah, and you said it's like junior Camogie. I think in terms of equality, it's sort of inequality for the players. Like, again, we talked about this before, because those organizations aren't the same organization. It's the players in the middle that are always getting screwed over. Like, and if that, I know there's a lot of fixture clashes in the GA. Like, we talk about it a lot here, but I think even if that was a junior hurling match, that would have been played, say, last night on a Wednesday at the very least, you know, and then played a senior football final on the Sunday. Like, actually, when I was speaking there, her point was that the football final is always in the last weekend of September.
Right. Yeah.
So, like, that's always locked in. Mm. And then the Camogie, like, they've known this. They played the semi-final back-to-back as well, which they weren't happy about, but they did it. And then they've given them 2 weeks' notice to say, can we play this game any other time? Can we play it last week? Can we play it next week or two weeks' time?
Yeah, the important thing as well, Conan, is that both teams were available last weekend.
Yeah, that's it. And they're both available next week as well. Like, there's nothing happening next week. And like, that's it. So it's really stupid. She's very frustrated. Like, I know, like, some of the quotes, and it can be almost taken out of context, making it a woman's versus
I hate that. That's turning me off it. This is an administration cock-up. And it's a problem with administrators. It's not, because we tear our head out with administrators in the men's game as well, Conor. Like, I mean, this is not an equality argument. And that kind of turned me off it a bit.
Yeah, no, and like, I don't think, in fairness to her, that she's going down that route. She's just really disappointed at the Camogie Association, because she's saying, as women, we're all talking about trying to take us on to the next level, trying to get equality with men, and like, we can't even sort ourselves out. We're screwing ourselves over, basically. So how are we ever going to get to that level if we can't talk to each other and do common
sense? That's it. Like, I saw the comparison to Loughmore or Castellani, and there's no comparison, because they're two senior teams, you know. They're just prestigious teams. I would argue that this would not happen, and it hasn't happened, when it comes to the senior football and the senior hurling being played on the same day. That's the comparison to Loughmore, not a junior, you know, a junior hurling match, you know, overlapping a senior football. I have to say, it probably wouldn't happen in hurling in Tipperary. It might happen in football in Tipperary, let's be honest about it, in the men's game. Do you know, I don't know, Conor, what your thoughts on it are. The Camogie Association, in their defence, have said that both opposition clubs were contacted, but a change was not feasible to these clubs. And they also used the excuse that the county team start on October the 17th. Now, that's total nonsense, because that's 3 weeks away. Next week wouldn't be impeding on that. I'm interested in them saying that both opposition clubs were contacted, but a change was not feasible to these clubs. Now, what change were they offered? Like, Monday night? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. They're not giving any more information on that.
Yeah, no, the only thing I wanted to add, and Conan's pointed out already, was that I think that Ashley Maloney was keen not to make that equality point, and that she said that you know, we're advocating for better equality and stuff like that, but if we can't even sort our own houses out, well then how can we be talking about stuff like that? But yeah, I didn't understand a couple of things from the Camogie Association. That first of all, what's the problem with playing a game next weekend if the county teams are out on the 17th, especially under the circumstances? And then the other thing was, I thought it was the contrast in the Tipperary ladies football statement compared to the Camogie one, which the Tipperary ladies football seem very keen to point out that they've always been willing to open up dialogue with the Camogie Association to try and find a solution. So they seem to be very much passing the buck over to the Camogie. But listen, it's a mess. It seems to me a fairly easily solvable mess. But at this stage, given so late, you know, that we're so late and we're looking at this weekend, it doesn't look like it's likely to be solved, and nobody wins as a result.
Yeah, where's the women's GPA in this whole thing, Conan? Like, I mean, not a dicky bird out of them. What do they ever do?
That's a very good question.
I've never once heard anything that they've done outside of release a joint statement with the GPA.
Yeah, this is exactly where they should be coming
in. Yeah, that's what they're for. That's what they're there for, a player welfare issue like this.
Unless is it an intercounty thing that they're, but like this is affecting a lot of intercounty players. You mentioned 10, there's actually 16, 10 of them are starters, you know, so there's so much overlap. And like I know it's like you might say it's junior or camogie, but the fact that it's on before the senior match, like that's really impacting the next game, the senior football final, which they might be more important. So like this is like if the ladies football board are up for talking, then where is the GPA to come in and say, right, let's all get into a room and we'll thrash this out?
Yeah, I think when you have Ashley Maloney so vocal about it, I think it's on the women's GPA then, you know, arguably the best footballer in the women's game, and she's making such a public issue out of this. I think it's this, it becomes the women's GPA issue at that point, you know. But anyways, moving on from that, onto some good news, Conan, because Conor Glass, here we go. He's back 5 years since he was robbed out of Minor by those horrible Australian clubs, taken away from Derry, trying to build a future on Conor Glass, and now he's back. He's only 21. He's a huge man, midfielder, and it looks like, I don't know, is he going to be deregistered, Conan, or like his career's kind of had stalled a little bit. I don't think it was moving at the pace maybe he wanted, but anyways, that's irrelevant now because we're not an AFL show, we're a GA show, and he's back for Derry. And the Glen as well.
Yeah, Glen Maharat. Like let's not worry about the AFL. The Derry are back. We're back in business. I actually came across Conor Glass 8 years ago. I think he's actually 22. And this is 8 years ago. I was up watching Glen Maharat. They won an Ulster minor title up in Belfast, and there was this ginger wing back who was just sensational. Like he wasn't the size that he is now, he was just a lovely footballer, like doing everything right all the time. So I grabbed him afterwards. I thought, this guy's man of the match, so I'll do an interview with him. And I asked him, so are you first or second year minor? And he looked at me and he said, I'm first year under 16. So he had 3 more years of minor on top of that, and then he kept growing as a footballer as well. And then he started leading those Derry minor teams, brought them to success playing midfield. Like it's like with him and Callum Brown, when they were just ripped out from underage and went out to Australia, you were thinking, oh, that's the perfect midfield, especially for the modern game. Two good footballers, two amazing athletes, and now that one of them's back, it's pretty exciting.
Is Brown not the forward? No, is he not the good full forward?
He can play, he can play full forward as well. He played full forward for the minors, but then he was playing midfield as well for his club, and he was just brilliant. Right. These good players can play.
Yeah, he's with Conor Nash. It's Hawthorne there with. He's Conor Nash, so I suppose Mead players will be, Mead supporters will be thinking, geez, Conor's left now, Conor Glass is left now, and Nash is still out there. We'd wish he'd come home as well. But look, it's good news. It's good news for him that he's home, and this is the whole thing. You lose a player for a while, he arrives back from professional professional environment at 21, and he's probably in a better place to come back and play Gaelic football after a little while when he immerses himself back into it than he would have been if he stayed potentially. Another bit of news is another player back for another county is an amazing one. I nearly fell off my seat when I saw this one. Gary Sice is back for Galway. I was like, what the hell is going on here? So he retired 3 years ago. I had him on the show, and fairly sure he's like more than happy, you know, just playing with Cara Finn. And I remember asking him about not playing kind of number 10 anymore. He kind of plays in front of the full forward line. And he's like, well, I'm not going tracking lads back or not have the legs to track anyway. Like, this is the car. Where's this man going to play for Galway? Like, I can see it from Gary Sice's point of view. It's only another month. I'm fit with Cara Finn. Why not give it a go under Pádraic Joyce? The other side of me is saying, like, Jesus, 3 years out of the intercounty game, he's ripping it up with Cara Finn, but Cara Finn hammer everybody. Do you know what I mean? For example, they hammered Salt Hill Knocknacarra the last day, 118-9 points. He scored 7 points. Like, that's not the reality of what he's going to have to face now coming into the intercounty game.
Yeah, and the thing actually from that interview that you did with him a couple of years ago, Willie, is that, you know, a few years ago particularly, there would have been a call to have, why can't Cara Finn just be the Galway senior team? And why can't the Galway team just play like Cara Finn? And why can't there be more players in? There arguably should have been more players in. But Gary Sice himself, during that interview, was very keen to point out the step up between top-level club football with Cara Finn and then the difference between having to go in with intercounty, having to play in it for years. So, and especially that stage, you're going back maybe 2 years at least, and Gary is 36 now. So I didn't quite fall off my chair, but I was surprised as well. But like, I don't know. The only thing I was reading Barry Cunningham there was saying how well he's playing And in terms of the best players in the club championship in Galway, and Gary Sykes has definitely been up there amongst them. And I suppose there's huge appeal in, like, you're going back in mid-September, you're going back for a maximum of, what, 3 months? There won't be any pre-season, they're not a huge allowance. Yeah. And everything that Galway will be doing between now and the game start will be tactical, I'd imagine. And Gary Sykes himself will probably be going in after the county final, considering that Carfin are likely to be there as well. So there's a huge appeal in that. How he's going to fit into a Galway team that were absolutely flying, come the league and look to have their shape in the forward line in particular worked out, I'm not quite sure. But like, I'd like to think that, like, Gary himself isn't going back in there if he didn't think he's not going in there to make up the numbers. He's only going back there if he thinks he can make a difference.
Well, that's it. I'd say he definitely wants to play. I suppose, like, I mean, he's not going to start. If he comes on and he's a very clever player and he's a good leader, and if he's able to give a few nice tasty balls to Shane Walsh, you know, on the diagonal, well, then he might definitely be worth maybe 20 minutes left in the game. I just think he'll find the pace of it incredible. And not only, say, if you want to play in the full forward line, now you have to worry about attacking corner backs and you're dragged the other end of the field. Now you have to get back up there. I don't know. Like, I mean, it's definitely going to be a difficult one, but probably for his leadership and his football brain, he's brought him back in. Doesn't it point out, Conan, the amount of players we lose in their 30s who don't want to commit to 9 months of the year, but now that there's no real pre-season and a short 2.5 month inter-county season, they're all like, well, I'll give it a blast here for that. Sure, that's not too much.
But it also, if you think about the Colm Kavanagh thing, where, like, he was playing at the start of the year and now he's not, it probably just depends on what you're doing when you're not training. So if you just sat around for 4 or 5 months, you might not fancy going to Ballybuffet to play Donegal in a knockout. But if you're Gary Sykes, just keeping yourself evergreen as he is, then, like, yeah, if you say it's only a month or 2 months, then why not give it a rattle? It's crazy though. When I saw the headlines, like, Gary Sykes is back, I thought, fair play, he's given another year of Corfin.
It was. I was genuinely surprised about it. I thought it was a good one. I'm a big fan of Gary Sykes, and he still is, to be fair to him, one of Corfin's best forwards, and that's not an easy thing to be considering the forward line they have. The Donegal final has been postponed. So Kilcare got a positive test. That wasn't going to stop the county final, because whoever it was going to have to probably sit it out, and the county final was going ahead. Then there's a positive test in Donegal training. Now, amazingly, the Kilcare and the Glenties, the Naomh Connell players, must have been in training with Donegal, even though they're in a county final. You would have thought they would have got that time off to concentrate on the county final, because now the county final's off because of that positive in Donegal training. So Ryan McHugh, Paddy McBrearty, Owen McHugh, Andrew McLean, Kieran Thompson, Ethan O'Donnell, Owen McGettigan. That's an Irish name. I don't know how to pronounce.
Jack.
What is it?
Looks like Jack to me.
Jack McKelbrew. Anyways, go on. We'll continue on there. I'm going to get absolutely lynched about that one. But anyway, all those players have to isolate now. So the county final's off. And I thought this was a classic from the Donegal County Board, because we know Donegal have been training away. Now, they're lucky enough that this happened after September the 14th, where they can actually admit that they were in with Donegal. So Donegal County Board statement said, after a long hiatus, and in line with GAA guidelines, the Donegal senior squad returned to collective training this week. All of the squad were tested for COVID-19, and one of the squad had a positive result. Isn't that a brilliant one, right? So they made sure, after a long hiatus, and in line with GAA guidelines, the Donegal senior squad returned to collective training this week, and about 3 weeks, 3 months earlier, Conan.
Imagine the contact tracers there trying to figure out, like, what was happening. Yeah. Hang on, there's no records for the last few months. Where did you all have your Bluetooth turned off? Or, they are very lucky that it happened. Now, obviously unlucky as well, but it's a bit of a mess. Like, yeah, all right, and it does worry me, like, going forward. You know, if a whole sort of team can be taken out like that, like, how quickly it can be done. Obviously, Donegal is a very bad part of the country at the minute, but I was just thinking about that soccer game where Leighton Orient might lose out in their League Cup game with Spurs because they've tested positive, and they're sort of thinking, well, the tournament needs to go ahead. Is that going to happen in GA when we get down to it in a month?
Yeah, maybe teams are just going to have to step out, and that's it. You know, like, I mean, that's the way it's looking. But anyways, lads, we know Killadangan won their first ever county title in 105 years last Sunday. the club was in a bad place in the 1990s. They were getting hammered at junior level, and they were able to turn it around in the last 25 years. So how did they do it? I caught up with their manager, Brian Lawler, earlier on Skype, and I started off by asking him how the celebrations were still going on in Killadangan.
I think from the older generation like myself, they have, but I think maybe some of the youngsters might be still at it.
Right, okay. So I'm sure, like, I mean, Sunday night must have been crazy, considering the manner of the victory.
Yeah, I mean, it was just everybody was so happy, you know, when the club have never won it, just to get to that point and actually bring home the cup. There was just such relief because we'd been so close maybe in recent years, and then just such joy in the parish. And I suppose for us all that were involved last year, like, we had the same group of players back again and the same management team. Like, we suffered defeat in the final last year and didn't really play up to our potential. So it was just the devastation of last year, and then contrasting that with the ecstasy of actually winning last Sunday, it was a great contrast and a great feeling.
Yeah, and relief as well, because there was a final in 16 as well. Had you lost Sunday, now you've lost the first three, you know, and now you're starting to get maybe the psychological issues Mayo have in the football, you know, that kind of a...
Yeah, listen, you don't want to be the team that keeps losing finals. Now, we did, yeah, I think we lost three in 5 years, but if you look at the teams, 16 was a very different type of a team. Like, there was a lot of lads that were kind of close to retirement.
Right. Now,
losing last year and this year were two very, more or less the same squad and the same management team. So I wouldn't, even though it was reasonably close in time, I wouldn't put 16 in the same bracket. Like, you know, we lost last year and we wanted to make up for that. But yeah, I mean, had we lost, it was 3 in 5 years. And then you're into that psychological state of, can we ever win a final? But then Brian Mullotney's goal just shows that, you know, 10 or 12 seconds can make all the difference in sport.
I have to say, I have an awful lot of respect for Brian, because I have been taken off in a match before and brought back on. And I was actually taken off again because it was that bad when I went back on, because I was sulking and I was in bad form. For him to do what he did, it says a lot about him.
Oh, listen, I think anybody should watch that for a lesson in mental strength, because as you said, you know, whatever it was, 44, 46 minutes, and it hadn't gone his way. And that's because of how good Lochmore was and were. And I mean, they were so good at closing down space that even a good forward like Brian didn't have it his own way, maybe in the first phase of the match. So he came off and, you know, he was sitting down for what, 20, 25 minutes, but he obviously kept his eye in the game and he maybe saw where the pockets of space were, because I thought his movements for the few minutes he was on were absolutely fantastic. And, you know, everyone's crediting the goal, which was absolutely phenomenal. But if you watch his 2 points, one off his left, one off his right, from very, very difficult angles, and the way he lost his man and the way he shot straight over the black spot. I mean, his contribution when he came back on was 3 shots and 1-2. It doesn't get any better than that.
No, it definitely doesn't. It's incredible stuff. So, Kamir, you said after the game that the win was 25 years in the making. And, like, I was reading about where Killadangan were back in the mid-90s, and you're losing to other teams, second teams. And I'm just wondering, like, even for other clubs listening in, wondering how you were able to turn it around. Like, what changed in the 90s? I know you won a minor B during the 90s. Was that the start of it?
Yeah, I suppose, listen, people have mentioned that it was 25 years in the making because we had come from junior. Now, I mean, the first thing I want to say is that in that 25 years, we've only won one county senior title. I mean, the big story in Tip in those 25 years was the 12 or 13 that Tommy Vara won, or the 6 or 7 that Turles won. But I think the reason the Killadangan story is getting the coverage is because of, I suppose, where we came from.
Yeah.
Because Turles were always a force, Tommy Vara were always a force, and always had that respect in Tip hurling. But, you know, Killadangan in 1995 self-relegated to Junior A because they couldn't be competitive intermediate level. And that's when, say, myself and a lot of my friends were kind of coming up to adult hurling age. Like, you know, we were 17, 18 years of age.
Right.
So when we came onto the scene, we were Junior A, and I was on the team cornerback at age 17, and it was Junior A. And we were hammered by Ross Gray's second team. And I suppose that's where the club were at that stage. I mean, we'd lost a lot of good players to other clubs, and we'd lost players to emigration. The facilities were very poor. There wasn't really much of a structure there coaching-wise. So really, from 96 to Dan Breen, that's when all the work was put in. And, you know, you ask what the secret was. I think it was just a lot of hard work and a lot of good people getting involved. And I think not just in the coaching side of it, but in the administrative side as well. We had some very, very progressive chair people, and they set up committees around finance and committees around field development. And there was also committees around coaching as well. And, you know, we slowly changed the mindset. Like, say, if you go back to that 96 start, like, adult team were junior A, but more importantly, all the juvenile teams were entered in C. And like, we never ever played against the likes of Tumivara or Nina. We just never did. And there was kind of a change of mindset. We had a bit of talent come through underage that we tried to push maybe the juvenile teams into the A section or even the B section just to try and be competitive. So it wasn't about winning titles at C. It was about maybe just getting competitive at B and at A level. And that's right. That's really where it started. Eamon Kelly got involved then with the then intermediate team and, you know, gave us an awful lot of belief. But I think what's important over that 25 years as well is that we didn't come up too quickly. Like, you know, over that 25 years, there was slow, steady progress. So from when we come up to intermediate, it was maybe 4 or 5 years until 01 that we won our first divisional intermediate. Then it wasn't until 04 that we won the first county intermediate and went on to win the All-Ireland. Then it wasn't until 08 that we won the divisional senior. We won the North Senior in 08. Then it wasn't until 8 years later that we actually got to a county senior final. So I think what I like about the way the club did it was that, you know, we set our goals every time and we got there, but we didn't get there too fast. And as we were progressing up the ladder at senior level, that was giving maybe the juvenile club and the minors and the under-21s a chance to really up their game as well. And, you know, you can see on the stats that we did start to contest minor A's and under-21 A's as we were progressing up the ranks, and that would have never happened before.
Right. Okay. So, like, I mean, you mentioned Eamon Kelly. We know him in Laois, and he was Offaly manager. He took over in 2000. So, I can understand that was your age group, you know, and you won the 2004 intermediate title and won the All Ireland that year. And I can understand that a good manager came in, gave you belief. You know, you maybe got a few players back involved, whatever. So I can understand those wins. What I'm wondering is what was going on at underage level. You mentioned coaching committees, finance committees. And, like, I mean, were these people pulled in that might not have come in voluntarily? You know, were these people, the right people being identified, or was this just kind of luck?
No. I mean, it was targeted. I mean, you know, good people got involved underage, like, you know, Darry Egan came in and did a good bit of work there. And they actually, you know, really pinpointed getting the senior players involved with the underage teams. And I think that really helped. So, you know, you see the loss in different teams where the main person in charge of an underage team is maybe the parent of one of the kids. But
yeah.
I think what Killalangan tried to do was, listen, you have to have parental involvement. That's important and it's necessary. But what happened in Killalangan was the guy that came in to coach them from the senior team was actually in charge and was calling shots rather than being just a peripheral figure. I think that really helped. And,
right.
You know, you do go and see matches and you see maybe a star on the senior team carrying the hurleys, but you kind of know by looking at it that he's only there on the championship day or he's, you know, but I think in Killalangan that the guys that came in and coached the underage teams from the senior team were very much invested in it, were there every night of training. And I mean, I know from this year and last year that, you know, I often got phone calls from some of the lads that they were going to be a bit late for training or miss the warm-up because they were involved with maybe an under-14 or under-16 team or even younger. So I could see the involvement straight away when I came in.
Right. Okay. I think that's an important thing because often with underage teams in clubs, you don't get that buy-in and it is a parent that takes it over and you can be very lucky with that or you can be very unlucky with that. And that's kind of how it kind of boils down.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's just a change of mindset as well. Like, you know, you can enter the lower competition and almost be guaranteed to win it and get silverware at the end of the year. But I suppose the bigger issue for the club is to try and enter the grade as high as you can. And even
right.
if you're not winning it, you just know that the pace of the game is better and that the skills are going to be honed more and that you're actually producing a better adult hurler for the club than if you stayed in the lower divisions.
Right, okay. And, like, I mean, what kind of a pick do you have? Like, I mean, Pucón is the village, but, like, you have a couple of other areas that you pull from as well.
Yeah, I suppose the parish is big enough, but, I mean, the population wouldn't be any bigger than some of our neighbouring parishes. I suppose there's two very good schools in the parish, which is a huge help. There's a primary school in Carrick and a primary school in Pucón, and they have grown in numbers in recent times. And I suppose that's been a focus as well, where the club have really tried to link with the two primary schools. And I know that they purchase hurleys for, I don't know, is it senior infants or first class every year and give them all a ball and a slitter, and they try and get involved with the primary schools as much as we can. And then it all kind of helps because you have the same players playing with each other in school and playing with each other down in the field, and there's a good bit of joined up thinking between the teachers that coach in the schools and the teacher and the committee on underage level in Killalangan. So it does work well as a marriage there.
Right. Okay. And I was reading that Killalangan underage teams, you're brought to other counties for challenge games and stuff like that.
Yeah, they did a kind of a twinning with I think it was Dunloy and Antrim over the years, and you know the Dunloy teams will come down and Kildangan teams will go up, and again that just I suppose makes the youngsters feel that bit special that this has been done for them, and they really enjoy those trips and remember those trips. And I would say an awful lot of the younger guys that won the medals last Sunday, when they were maybe under 12 or under 14, I'm sure they remember trips up to Antrim because it was all starting to happen around that time.
Right. Okay. So, like, I mean, it's a great story, Brian. There's no doubt about that. Like, I mean, I was reading your complex two pitches, dressing room, meeting room. It's a cost of 700,000 and you're completely debt free. Like, there's no doubt whatever chairman you got involved, whoever set up the committees and targeted the right individuals to do the different work. Like, I mean, that's probably the key behind the whole thing.
Yeah, listen, I mentioned earlier on about, you know, good finance committees. Like, since I've been involved with Kildangan and the adult club, they have really been innovative around fundraising. And that's why they were able to get that complex debt-free and why they were able to build the two pitches when all we had was one sloped pitch before that was going the other direction. But, you know, they have fine facilities now and they've managed to do it in the black, which is phenomenal. And, you know, for that to happen, this is what I was talking about, a 25-year project just to win one county senior title. It was, you know, progressive involvement of the parish, right? That I think Kildangan have been very good at creating a kind of an atmosphere of inclusion, and that the whole parish feels like they're part of the club and the team, and that they don't mind then contributing to fundraisers when they come up. Like, what I point out would be, in 2004, we did a trip to New York organised by Kildangan, but they made it into not just a team holiday. I know all the players did go, but I'd say only maybe 25 or 30 of the travelling party were players, because actually 84 people went on the trip.
Right.
And it was all sorts of people from the parish. And I remember they got gear for it. You know, they had jackets and had hats, and it was cold when we went to New York, but they kept wearing that gear when they came back and started going to matches. And it was that kind of community involvement then that got people behind fundraisers in the club, that led to the facilities that are there now, that led to the money being available to take kids away on trips and so on. So it was really a kind of an atmosphere that was created of inclusion and bringing people into the club. And I think that's hugely important, because I think if you focus just on your top team or your senior team, that's fine, you'll have success for that period of time that they're at that level. But I think when you look after the bigger parish and maybe the players that aren't the superstars, they become your coaches, they become your scoreboard operators, they become your lotto sellers and so on. And I think Kildangan have no problem now finding people to do jobs around the place and sell a lot of tickets and so on. And that's because of that big push to involve the community on those trips to New York and to look after them with tickets and to look after them when fundraisers are happening and so on.
Right. Okay. That's definitely an interesting one. Is it a weird one that you're finished? I know you'd be absolutely delighted with the county title, but at the same time you've got a young team, and even a match or two in Munster, if that will become your next, you know, goal down the line, it would be nice to have dipped your toes in that, you know, but you won't get that chance. Is it, I suppose you have any, I don't know why I'm even bringing up Munster, you've just won your first ever county title.
Yeah. I think the lads are plenty to celebrate with a county title, but I think I know what you're saying. Like, listen, everyone would love to go out now against maybe the teams that have won the other divisions, like, you know, even the Pearson and Ballygunner and so on, but I think Colin, we knew from the very start that wasn't a runner. Like, it's not like that was just told to us last week. I mean, we knew, and it kind of served us well that we were building towards the county final and we had six matches to win, and we kind of used that as a platform. And, you know, we knew from the very start that it was ending with the county final this year, and we're just so delighted that we actually got there, that we weren't planning any further ahead. And I think we'd be very foolish to be setting our sights on monsters now or anything like that. I mean, the huge challenge for our lads now is to get back next year and just try and retain Dan Breen, because, you know, more than 100 years we hadn't won one. We're delighted to win one, and it's just going to be a huge challenge to go out now again and try and retain it.
Yeah, exactly. It definitely will. Well, come here. Best of luck. We'll celebrate this one first anyway, Brian, which I'm sure you will, especially with no Munster club. Come here. Thanks very much for taking the call, and congrats.
No problem, Colin. Thanks a lot.
Can't touch this. Can't touch this.
A few weeks later, they played Kilkenny below Nolan Park. The same year. Can't touch this. And they were being hockey. But the camera went in. There was a fella warming up. Jesus, you should see him. Yeah, that fuck. He was massive. Legs, arse, built. But I bust out laughing watching him. There he was, the epitome of what I said.
told you, homeboy, you can't touch this. Yeah, that's how we living, and you know you can't touch this. Look in my eyes,
All right, so he's won an All-Ireland, 5 Ulster titles, 2 All-Stars, and he's no longer Sean's little brother. It's Colm Kavanagh. He retired during this week and he joins us on the line now. So you've shaken off Sean's brother tag, Colin, do you think?
Yeah, I would hope so at this stage now. I got a lot of abuse of it for numbers of years on the pitch, and it probably only stopped a few years back. So, no, I'm sort of delighted that now I can play club football again, and I don't have boys saying to me, you know, you're only playing county football because you're a brother. So, yeah.
Would they be saying that to you? They would. I have to hold my hands up and say, for the first 3 or 4 years when you broke onto the scene, I did. When I saw you, I just thought Sean's younger brother.
Yeah, look, it definitely happened lots of times. And to be honest, when I was a young kid, like I would have reacted quite negatively to it, let's say, in terms of you know, giving a wee bit back to players when they said it to me. But it was part and parcel. And look, probably some of the criticism that I would have took early on in my career was probably part of it was justified. Part of it wasn't, obviously. But the whole Sean's brother piece, it didn't sit well with me. Like, I just didn't like it because we were two completely different people, two completely different types of player. It didn't go down too well. But look, hopefully now that I can look back in the memory side and say, look, it didn't apply, and I got out of that shadow eventually.
Well, that's the thing. I think, like, I mean, I suppose you defining a role for yourself in the team, at the start you were more of a utility player, you know, you were playing midfield and you were wing forward. Then you became the regular midfielder, and obviously we'll get into how your role evolved in a little while. Nailing that down, you know what I mean, probably was important.
Yeah, it probably didn't. It took me a while to find my feet. When I came in, and like obviously I was coming from a minor and under 21 setup where I was a 14. Like, I played at 14, and I came from a team that, you know, we're playing a lot of nice football in terms of long kick passing, and we're looking for the big man inside. And you know, that suited me at that time, and suited the under 21s and minors. Actually, was Matty Donnelly's dad, Liam, would have took us. So, like, right. I was coming from that sort of transition period into a senior team that obviously was really well established and going really well, and didn't really play that same brand of football. And you know, started out at 14. My first championship game was, I guess, maybe Fermanagh or Donegal playing at 14. And you know, as you say, you know, gradually come back out the pitch towards half forward and then in the midfield. So yeah, it took me a wee while probably to find, you know, where I was best suited. And to be fair, like, Mickey did stick with it. Like, and I said early on in the campaign, like, you know, there probably wasn't social media back then as much, but it was more like message boards and stuff. You would have seen a lot of stuff written, you know, on that side of things.
Right. So come here, I want to give you my theory on your role that has, you know, evolved and to the point where you're getting an All-Star at fullback, which I'll ask you about in a minute. But like, I mean, my theory on this is that you started this role, you decided to do this on the field, and it went from there, that you weren't instructed to do it. Is that fair, or am I completely wrong?
No, you've hit the nail. That's 100%. Like, I think, you know, when I moved that wing forward position, and even in the midfield, I had a natural instinct probably to go back into that sort of defensive, you know, in that sort of defensive area and try and sort of break up play and pick up the ball there and sort of nearly transition it into the midfield or forward line or wherever I could get my hands on it. But it sort of happened really naturally, where I sort of just went in and done it, and then, well, geez, you know what, actually you might be half decent at this here. The role sort of just ran from there. Like, so it wasn't really, didn't really sit down and go, you know, where are you best placed, or how, it wasn't done by design as such. It just more or less naturally occurred. And like, we know, even now, even when I was finishing up and, you know, this last year and all, like, it's not as if we never really spent any time sort of knowing how, you know, trying to analyse how I could do better at that role. Yes, you had a wee bit of video work that, you know, maybe spot an opportunity or an issue that you maybe have, you know, missed a tackle, or, you know, your position was slightly off. But apart from that, like, a lot of it just sort of came from, you know, me going back in it and sort of playing it as I see it and playing it off the cuff. And, you know, luckily enough, it worked probably more times than not.
Yeah, no, it definitely did. But like a feature of your role, playing that role, like we've seen lots of players going back into the sweeper role. They're usually wing forwards. But like, I mean, you were doing it from midfield. So you'll contest the kick out. The minute you notice that that kick out hasn't been won either by you or the break has been won, you're sprinting back in front of that D. You know, no one's ever really done that role before. And again, that's on you deciding to do that.
Yeah, that's it. Like, you know, it was at the start, it probably was a bit strange because there was times where you were, you know, as you say, you're contesting a kick out, and if the kick out went short, it wasn't too bad because you could nearly get some of the half forwards or somebody to pick up your man and, you know, release you to go back. But then, you know, sometimes it was difficult in that the ball was kicked out and maybe, you know, went maybe midfield and you were sort of half involved and half not involved. And there was that sort of dilemma, should I go back, should I stay? And that, like, so it was strange at the start, I think, to get used it, but then it sort of become a wee bit, you know, you sort of you recognize the circumstances of when to get back and when to actually sometimes stand there and, you know, tackle and do what a normal midfielder would do.
Yeah, because that was the thing, and something that I was thinking in the last year or two as Tyrone have kind of, like, maybe in 2013-14 when Tyrone were pretty kind of going back into zones, it was less risky for you to do that. But now in the last year or two that Tyrone are kind of matching up a little bit more around the field, that you're leaving, you know, your man in the midfield, not so sure if somebody's going to be able to pick him up.
Yeah, look, I suppose a lot of teams have, you know, including Tyrone or whatever, have now, as you say, went back into zones, and, you know, because everybody was on their way back with the ball as such, you know, it you know, my man was never really going to do any damage because he was going to be a corner forward, a half. It become more trickier when we were trying to, as you said, probably pushing up for kickouts. I'm trying to really push on teams and sort of, you know, stifle that because, and then not retreating. So, for example, if they got a short kick out away and we were deciding to push, more risk involved because I had to stay on my man to point. To, you know, and sort of it was a tricky one to know when to go there. And then there was obviously time probably whenever we pushed up and then the ball was in behind and I was still in midfield and there was actually space in behind. So, look, it was a balancing act and something that, you know, you can work on all day and train scenarios and, you know, all that, but some of it you just have to play it as you see it and really depend on how the team's going in terms of trying to attack and trying to, you know, or whether we're trying to go back in that sort of defence. And a lot of it depends on the stages of the game as well. So, like, there's going to be stages of the game where you're going to be pressing up high in teams and trying to get the ball and really stripping the ball. There's going to be other parts of the game where you're happy enough to sit back and go, you know what, we're 5 points up here. You know, come on ahead and we'll see if we can break you down. And that's an easier time to do that, you know?
Yeah, no, it is. Like, are you surprised that no team ever really, like, when you were at your at very best in that role, everybody knew you were going to do it, but no midfielder ever followed you in and actually gave you someone to mark, right? Like, you know, you were very good at that free role, doubling up, and you're a great tackler, you know, disciplined tackler. But were you surprised at how many teams never tried to counter it?
Probably actually was. I'm sure you were nearly always waiting for somebody to do something different to throw you off your game. Now, Donegal did try it. What year was it? I'm not sure of the year, but the put a big tall fella and he came running in and he stood on top of me,
right,
and actually marked me in one of the championship games. But it didn't really pay off him that day because I don't know whatever guy came in, he didn't really make any runs. He sort of stood beside me, but I was still able to actually execute what I was doing because he wasn't actively trying to really run for the ball. He just ran in top of me to nearly stand beside me. Like, but
I guess
now it sort of, that was probably the only one and only time where, well, not one and only, to be fair to Dublin, like, they sort of were able to play around me many of the day. And that obviously happened when you know, in big days where, you know, they were just cute enough to be able to pull me out of position and get into scoring positions to be able to execute. So, but apart from that, like, yeah, there's a lot of teams were happy enough to let me stand there, and I was happy enough to do it.
Was that the day against Dublin? Was it 2017 where they beat you in the semi-final, where you kind of realised, right, these lads are being too patient now. We're getting none of the turnovers we used to get. They're picking us off, and they were able to find that space.
Yeah, they were, like, and they were able, the way they were sort of nearly probing down the wings and, you know, coming in around the loops, and then they were finding wee pockets in front of the D. So it was very hard for me if I was pushing out. On that day, then, you know, with left holes in behind, for them to get in behind, and then if they didn't push out, they were just taking shots from the D, you know, from the top of the D, and putting them straight over the bar, and I was too slow at coming out. So, I got found out a few times, probably, and probably Dublin being the best at it in terms of being able to pick around that pick around that system. And obviously they've played against it numerous times. Every team does it against them to try and hold them off. And I say they were very good at it every time we went out. But yeah, look, we tried to adopt it and I tried to adopt how I positioned myself and how I tried to impact it a wee bit more. But to be honest, more days than not, I was on the wrong side of it, like in terms of my own performance, you know, which sort of annoyed me a bit.
Well, against Dublin maybe, but against most others, that role worked absolutely brilliantly for Tyrone. Come here, what do you make of your all-star at full-back? Like, I mean, you're a full forward, like you say, you're a midfielder, you're a wing forward, you're an all-star full-back. What do you think of that? Like, I'm sure Sean slags you about that.
No, he does. Look, you're delighted to win. From a player point of view, look, you're delighted to pick up anything. I said to every single person I'm talking to, you don't play for these awards, but they are nice and you have to really cherish them. So, to be honest, position-wise, I don't really care. Whether right or wrong or different, I'm sort of happy just to be. I was happy to be there and happy to take the position. Obviously, there was a lot of stuff about it. I think that year with me getting full back, but there was other players on that panel, on that All Star team, were playing. I think that got all sorts of positions that weren't playing as well. So I think just the full back one for me was pretty highlighted because I was a midfielder and I wasn't a full back. If you look back through it, there was a couple other fellas, one or two in particular, that were in positions. Got all sorts of positions that they weren't playing either. It's the type of system where you have to be there. The positions nowadays don't really matter in a way, because a cornerback can come up and kick as many points as a corner forward, and your corner forward can be as good a tackler in the team back in defence. So referring to people as individuals positions at the minute, I think, is very, very difficult, because there's a lot of guys that can do it all.
No, that's definitely true. But if you had to choose between your All-Star at fullback and your All-Star at midfield, you're choosing your midfield All-Star as the one you cherish more, though.
Well, possibly only because the number and you don't really read too much in it, to be honest. I'm very, very happy and delighted to pick them up, and look, it's something I can look back on maybe at some point in my life. But no, you don't really look towards them. It's more the probably sentimental stuff that I sort of looked towards over the last couple of years when I knew I was going to be retired, in terms of having the kids and the pitch and all that sort of piece is more important to me than awards. But yeah, to answer your question, I'll take the midfield one over fullback. But my dad was a fullback, so he would be very proud to say that he has a son with an all-star fullback.
Ah, very good. Yeah, well, that's a nice little angle on it. Definitely. Come here. You mentioned, having the children on the pitch and stuff like this, because it's strange timing for anybody looking from the outside. Collie, you're in the middle of the season. You started this season. It's a very short season. You have a huge game in Ballybuffet coming up against your enemies. You know, for people looking, in on it, you're going, what's going on here?
Yeah, look, I've been asked this obviously since the announcement was made, in terms of why now, and why not just set it out and play the rest of the season and all that side of it. But look, to be honest, there's probably a number of factors really that played into the decision, and one slight one being obviously my knee was giving me a bit of problems over the club season, and it just hasn't got any better. The business have obviously taken off over the last number of months, last few weeks, and look, we're just flat out. I'm back and forth to London with the business, and the dealing with guys over there. So,
right.
Look, it was probably one of the biggest factors in that. I didn't want it to come to a head a few weeks down the line where Mickey's saying to me, I need you to train 4 nights a week here. And I'm going, I'm in London here 2 nights, so I can't. Something has to give. And at my age, I can't afford to be missing trainings. I can't afford to be missing matches. And I can't be, So, that between the business and obviously my body just not being 100%. My wife would have been happy. She would have been more than happy to see me go back from that side of it. But look, they're the two factors probably that played in the other small part of it was probably not having slightly lack of motivation, in that there was going to be very little, if any, supporters there. And I played football for that buzz of playing in front of people. And that's a big part of what I enjoy. It's the biggest buzz and biggest joy I get of playing football, to seeing the communities, seeing the different clubs, seeing the elderly and the youth coming on the pitch afterwards, obviously not in Crow Park, but just seeing people there. And that's the atmosphere. That's the whole point of, that's the whole buzz about the GAA, like not so that sort of when I was writing it down the page as a con, a pros and cons, like that, you know, that was a smaller one that they're sort of going like,
right, okay,
this isn't going to sit well.
So how many different pros and cons had you put down? Obviously there was more cons, right, that helped you come to the decision.
I can't remember the numbers, like, but yeah, like, it was definitely, like, I was finding it hard to look at the pros. Like, look, I love, it's been a privilege to represent Tyrone all my life, and I recognise that at all stages that I was in a great position, and I've loved it. But I think it was more, it wasn't as simple as the pros and cons. It was more what's going to be the priority in my life now for the next years going forward. And
yeah,
like, obviously work and business, I put football first for 13, 14 years there. And taking certain jobs to suit training and all that sort of piece, that, and I sort of realised that, you know, this is the time where the business is kicking off, and I need to put the same energy into what I did in the football now into my business, and that was probably a huge factor in it, and you know, that just more that prioritisation piece and what's going to be important. Look, don't get me wrong, it wasn't easy, and there was a lot of head scratching moments of whether I should do it or not, but you know, on the balance of things, I wouldn't want to look back in 6 months' time and say, look, you know, we're not in the position we want to be, because, you know, this pre-Christmas period where it's going to be very busy for us,
right,
you know, didn't go to plan.
Well, that's the thing. And it's important to say as well that you started up the business during lockdown. So you're trying to get it up off the ground, which, you know, it's a new business.
Yeah, a lot of things. I suppose you had said there about me. I started the year out, and that's fair. Like, I started, actually for the first time ever had a really good pre-season with Ronan, which I'd never had. You know, I from the first night back training in December, I was there, and you know, going through all the pre-season training, which probably the previous 5 years I hadn't done, and obviously then played some of the league games and the last game against Dublin there. So at that point in time, everything was okay, and the knee was manageable, and everything was going all right. But during lockdown, obviously, a lot of things changed from the point of view of my body, an injury point of view. You know, going through the club side of it, obviously, it left my employment that I was with at that time, and obviously, I started up the new business. And you know, the balance, everything just shifted at that point in time, and
yeah,
over that period of COVID. And you know, to be honest, COVID gave me a bit of an eye opener as well. Like, and sort of said, look, you know, it's gave me a bit of time to assess what I want to do in life in general, outside of football. And you know, I wanted to use that time wisely, and I think I have, you know.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, just to explain to people who aren't inside the intercounty bubble, that it dominates your thought process probably too much that you don't actually have time to think of, you know, more important stuff.
That's 100%. Like, and I would be saying to any players that to have that awareness, because like, I lived in a bubble there for 13 years, and you do call it the bubble, like, whereby you live for your training, you organize your everything around training, you organize your kids and family around your training, you organize your work around training, you organize events, everything is solely, you have a sole focus. Well, I did anyway. I had a sole focus in my life of, you know, being successful at football and being successful at sport, and you put everything else to the side at that point in time. So yeah, look, it's actually dangerous in a way, because you know, I'm probably lucky enough in that I still have my qualifications, and I've started a new business, and I'm sort of at that stage where I'm hopefully going to be okay. But you know, there is a lot of people that probably do that and probably don't end up on the right side of it. So like, you have a tunnel vision for them number of years that you just want to win football games, and you'll do anything. You know, you'd be obsessed with doing anything to actually make it work. So that's fair to say.
What's the new business anyways? It's recruitment, or is that what it is?
No, our new business is we actually do tax consultancy. Name's Inspired Tax Incentives. So we basically do specialised tax work for UK companies, research and development, tax claims and capital allowances. So we're actually dealing with a lot of Irish guys who've made really good businesses over in London. A lot of construction companies and that, so we go in and get them a lot of tax back, and they're all very happy at the end of it. So, but look, you know what? To be honest, the doors, a lot of the doors that have opened to date have been through GAA connections, ironically enough, and that, you know, a lot of the guys over there still have a strong affiliation with home and with the GAA network and that, and you know, are willing to give you meetings and speak to you. And you know, it's from one side of it, from the football side of it, it's brilliant, and to be able to see that guys will, you know, successful businessmen will speak to you and, you know, at least give you a meeting as such, because, you know, they actually recognise who you are and they know that you're going to try and go in and do a good job for them.
Right, and yeah, and that's a great place to start then in London, because obviously the GAA connection through the GAA teams, and we know all these successful, you know, Irish businessmen are connected to the GAA over there, so it's a great in.
Yeah, look, that's their link to home. So, like, you know, and there's so many, like, it surprised me, to be honest, number one, the scale, and number two, the links and how people sort of, you nearly become more Irish as you go over, when you go over to London. You know, there's such a strong community network over there, and like, there is a lot of people that, as you say, have made really, really good business, have done really good business over there, and are willing to open the door. And I don't get me wrong, if you don't deliver, part reasoning for what I'm doing is that, you know, they'll give you a meeting and you might get a piece of work out of it, but you really need to deliver on that piece of work. And that's going back to the hard work thing. From my personal point of view, I always try to work, be the hardest worker on the pitch and off the pitch. So now's my time to actually deliver on what I'm doing off the pitch as well.
Yeah, she's great. It's a great idea. Any interest in punditry? I saw you wanted to coach. You don't have time to get into your coaching aspirations. What about punditry? You won't be on the Sunday game in a year saying Mickey Hart has to step down now or anything crazy like that.
I don't think so. I leave all the good punditry to Sean. I think he's better suited. But no, look, I have no idea what I say. At the minute, my sole focus is in getting the business up and going and really driving it to where it needs to go in the next 6 months. And look, I obviously love the GAA and the circles that run in that. And I would like to get involved at some stage, and whether it is coaching, whether it's a small bit of punditry, I don't know at this stage. It's literally, you know, you still always want to have that affiliation and that connection with everyone, because some of the messages I've got, like, over the last few days from, you know, different counties, different players from different counties, some of the Dublin fellas, some of obviously my own players. But like, it sort of hit home at the end there. You're going, you know what, like this, you know, you kill each other in the pitch for years, and, you know, there could be a bit of verbals here and there, and you might have a few digs here and there. But when it boils down to it, like, we're all GAA folk, and, you know, we all sort of look back and, you know, and a lot of messages received, you sort of nearly, you're going, wow, you know, step back there. There's such nice thoughts. So people actually do think that, you know, hold you in nice regard, and you know people ask me, you know, we'll meet up for a coffee or a pint at some stage down the line, and yeah, look, it's nice to see.
Yeah, she's any message that you're like, whoa, what is he doing messaging me after what I said to him?
Pretty much, like, yeah, a couple of guys, not that I've done anything overly crazy over my time. I hope I didn't offend anybody in too bad a fashion, like, but I tried to hold myself in decent enough regard over my career. But it's just nice to receive personal messages from certain individuals that, as you say, you've went to war with for years, and you know, just got that mutual respect for you. And I probably will hit some of them up at some point if I'm down around that direction. That's what the GAA is all about. I think you'll be looking back in years. I think hopefully you'll be looking back in years to come and meeting some of these guys, and we'll be able to chat about the battles that we've had. It's similar to probably what Sean is at now. Like, you know, he meets guys that he's played against for years, and, you know, they do probably reminisce a wee bit of, you know, them games that they played in, and, you know, them iconic moments and that. So, yeah, hopefully that sort of lands itself to a similar piece to myself.
Yeah, well, listen, you've definitely looked forward to it. Colm, come here, congratulations on a brilliant career. I never really know whether to congratulate someone on their retirement or what you say about the actual retirement, but you definitely congratulate them on a brilliant career. Thanks for making the time for us. I know you're busy with work and everything.
No worries at all, bye. Brilliant. Thank you very much for having me.
I work as a policeman at Garda Síochána down in Store Street, and I'm coming back out, and there's a cohort of loyal Tyrone fans still up in the stand as you come back out, and they're roaring at me, "Hey, Coffrey, you Free State bastard." and next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
All right, so Les, the match is on TV this weekend on Saturday night at 7 o'clock. RT are up in Cavan. Surprised enough to see that. Cavan football championship isn't exactly, you know, prestigious or anything like that. But at the same time, it's a fairly novel final. Crosser Lough versus King's Court. King's Court won it in 2015. They hammered Cavan Gaels, completely surprised them in the semi-final. Cavan Gaels were the favourites to win it out, especially with Garrod McKiernan after transferring to him. So King's Court Stars beat Cavan Gaels 2-12 to 10 points. Crosser Lough are Darren McVitie's close. They're doing well. They lost the final in 2018. They haven't won it since 1972. Unless Darren McVitie's going to make a surprise return back to this. He looks fairly happy in his latest tweets, Con, and he's trying it out with Aussie Rules.
Yeah, enjoying life. I was actually just really looking forward to seeing King's Court because Pádraig Faulkner's playing midfield for them and banging in goals. But
banging in goals?
I've heard, yeah, especially in the first round. I think he scored one against Killigarry. We've seen Pádraig Faulkner surges for Cavan from fullback, so to see him from midfield will be exciting for King's Court. But I heard a lot of boys tell me about Barry Riley, so apparently he's one of the most skillful players in Cavan. He's just never played county.
I love those lads.
He's playing. Yeah, and he's kind of on the half-forward line, and I think it's one of those guys where, you know, everyone's annoyed that he never has been brought into the county panel, and by all accounts, maybe he's not as physically up-to-date, like, for tracking back and stuff like that, but he seems to be a real stylish, classy player playing on the 40, so he's going to be one I'm looking forward to seeing.
Well, I have two words for you to answer that. Owen Merchant.
Testify.
Johnny Giles will tell you size shouldn't matter at all. Like, I mean, listen, that's it. I think if you're wiry, you don't need to be that big. Sure, look at Ryan McHugh, Connor. Like, I mean, size isn't all that important. Wiriness is way more important than size.
Colin Cooper is the best player ever.
Actually, Colin Cooper was fairly big towards the end. Colin Cooper would surprise you when you meet him in person. He's a decent size.
Yeah. Well, Colin Cooper's just over 6 foot, I think. It's just because he's a bit more wiry looking, maybe a bit kind of...
Yeah, he was scrawny when he started.
Well, filled out at the start especially. But I can remember over the years plenty of kind of players that weren't giants kind of excelling for Cavan. So I'm not sure why that's the reason. When you were mentioning it, Conan, though, I thought it was going to be the classic case of, well, he's all the skill, but he doesn't have the commitment. So, but that's not the case with Barry Riley. Well, then maybe a good showing this weekend might put him into the plans for later on this year or next year.
Yeah, we never commiserated you on Kilshima, Connor.
I was hoping you'd avoid
that. We're back to club preview. What's the post-mortem on this? You didn't show up in the night.
Yeah, were you told that?
Well, I read about it.
No, it just never happened for us, Bully, to be honest. Fair play to Ball. They were hungrier, they'd more intensity about them on the night. They got ahead of us early and we could never reel them back in. I think we got to the third water break, I think we got to within a point, and then the water break came and they stretched it back to three, and then they got a late point at the end to win by four. So listen, we scored 7 points on the back of having scored 20 in the semi-final and 2-14 in the quarter-final. So if you had told us beforehand that we were only going to concede 1-8, we would have bit your hand off. But we just never at the races, which is the most disappointing thing about the whole thing, I suppose.
Right, did you make your speech in the dressing room? Are you out? Or is this giving you the motivation to carry on for one more year?
No speeches to be made, Wooly. We were just up in the stand. Yeah, and it was pretty much some of us were on the pitch kind of listening to the speeches afterwards, and some of us were up in the stand and some of us made a quick exit. So there was a bit of a post-mortem on Sunday, and I'd say more of a post-mortem for some of the lads on Monday. I didn't quite join them for that, but I would imagine, Wooly, like, not 100% confirmed, but I would imagine that's probably it for me. Might play a bit of junior next year, but I was the oldest in the team, I think, by 4 or 5 years anyway, so it's probably about time I exited the stage left.
Yeah, well, and did Bella give you 3 cheers?
No, they didn't. Ger Flanagan, we mentioned last week in El Podcastico, was John Captain. So he made the speech for Ball and he didn't mention 3 cheers at all. He just said that he just said hard luck, obviously, and just told us we'd be back. But a nice kind of sentiment as opposed to the somewhat empty 3 cheers that we talked about
before. The more grown up version of a county speech. Nothing. On Sunday then, this is Super Sunday, lads. There is no doubt about that. This is a Sunday to get very excited about when it comes to club action. We have the Kilkenny County Final. We have the double All-Ireland champions playing the double league champions in Kilkenny. Ballyhale Shamrocks versus Dixborough. Plenty of people pulling me up. I was going on about how it's what a brilliant interprovincial championship it would be with Ballyhale and the Pearshig and Ballygunner and these teams in it. And a lot of people telling me, don't count out Dixborough yet, buddy. There's a shock on the cards this Sunday. So, that's Killian Buckley's club, and they are county champions in recent years. So maybe it's not a foregone conclusion. It's just, who are they going to get to mark Colm Fennelly? Because Killian Buckley might pick up TJ Reid. You wouldn't know. Good chance that might happen.
Michael Fennelly, right? Am I right?
Colm Fennelly, Mike, just keep your mouth shut, Conan. When it comes to hurling, Michael Fennelly's retired. He's the Offaly manager at the moment. So we'll continue on from there. We'll move on to football quickly, and we'll hope Brian Carroll will be here on Monday, and we won't have to listen to Conan. Because the Dublin County final is fantastic. Ballyboden against Ballymun. I have a huge interest in Dublin club football, and this is a very big one. Fancy Ballyboden here, lads. I think they're probably a better team than Ballymun, where Ballymun, Conan, have the better standout individuals.
Yeah, and I suppose they've been performing at that level for a lot longer, whereas with Ballymun's their strifes are well documented, whereas Ballyboden have always just been consistently up there. But it's probably the two best teams you could have picked at the start of the year because of the players that they have. That Ballymun are playing as a good team now because of the year that's in it, and they're both sort of physically just amazing. They're imposing, both of them. So I'm going to be really interested in seeing it. It'd be interesting to see if anybody can stop Colm Baskill, because I've yet to see it at a club level. But obviously Ballymun, if you're going to pick any team, they have a number of defenders to do a job on them, then they're
yeah, good. I think John Small would pick him up, right? Because Baskill floats from outside to centre forward, back to full forward. I think Small would probably be a good matchup for him. And in fairness, Small has a good record of blotting out inter-county players. Now, that's in the half forward line, not in the full forward. Maybe it's a case where Small picks him up when he comes out, and, who's going to get the job of marking him when he's in? Maybe Philly.
Really?
Philly be down the pitch trying to score points. I don't know. But if he is given that job, then that's probably the best double team that you could imagine to try and keep him quiet. And that's probably the best way of doing it, because he will just go drifting to get on ball. And we were no match for him whenever we played him, but he just hurts straight through that number 11 spot, comes straight through.
Yeah, that's the thing. And him and his brother then, Ryan, they actually switch positions. And I like that. I like a centre forward and a full forward, which are interchangeable whenever you feel like it, where they're both comfortable in those positions, because it can obviously confuse the full back and the centre back. Full back is given a man marking job. Now, what am I doing out here? Now, are they switching? These kind of conversations. Are you picking him up now? Yeah, well, I'm dropping off him. They don't know what's going on for a few minutes as you're whacking him in. I was reading a piece by Frank Roach on the clubs in Dublin, the super clubs in Dublin. Get this, Ballyboden currently has 172 teams. Let's just get your head around this. And a huge amount of credit has to go to the administrators in Ballyboden. 172 teams across male and female, the four codes, all age groups. Its membership, playing and non-playing, stands at 3,400, right? Kilmacud Crokes, they have a membership close to 5,000. They have 160 teams. These teams, the likes of Kilmacud Crokes, I don't know what it is about South Dublin. Maybe it's, I don't know, people relocating there, bigger population and people from the country relocating there, and the membership soaring because of work in Dublin. You take the likes of St. Vincent's on the north side, just as a way of comparison, probably the most prestigious club in the whole of Dublin from a football point of view. They field 40 teams. Ballyboden field 172 teams, Conan.
And do you know what's really unbelievable about that is that there's actually a second club in Ballyboden, which I wasn't aware of until last week. I was out watching a game, and I assumed that I was going to Ballyboden St. Enda's, but they kept, every time I pointed in, it was Ballyboden Wanderers. And there's a second club just out in the mountains, just outside Ballyboden.
Sure, that's not a soccer club now. Wanderers is not a GA.
It's actually a very old club as well, and a real proud. Actually reminded me of being back up in Ulster, because you're going up the mountains, there's nothing really there, and then bang, this massive empire, big clubhouse, lovely pitch covered in trees. It was a yeah, and a good game, like real passionate breed. But I was like, if Ballyboden's that big as it is, St. Enda's, there's a second club here. It's crazy what's happening.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. It's just like, how many teams does Kilchy Mott by way of comparison feel, Connor?
Jeez, I would say between everything, like we have a few ladies teams now as well. So between, I'd say 20, would it be something like that? If right. Even
and even, but even the headache, you know, trying to organize 20 teams, you know, how many pitches would you have then? Maybe one pitch and a training pitch.
Yeah, it's two pitches together, basically. Yeah.
Right, right. So 172 teams, how could they fit all these in? Like, I mean, and then I suppose with the coronavirus and the distancing, like imagine the poor Ballymun administrators or the Ballyboden administrators. Ballymun, incidentally, have about 400 or 500 members, maybe 300 playing members. So Ballymun Kickham is really back above their weight in Dublin club football by way of, you know, playing numbers and just sheer size. So Ballymun are the Laois and Ballyboden are the Dublin. And Ballymun are taking on. Why am I thinking Ballyboden are going to win this? Come on, Ballymun. Just get stuck into those boys with all their teams. And I hope Ballymun win it. It's very, very difficult for a club to retain the Dublin Championship, Conan. Like, I mean, that is it. That hunger, that, you know, really ravenous kind of diving on every ball just isn't there the following year.
Yeah, I think everybody in Ballymun now is now raising that you have made them your team.
Yeah, they're screwed.
Yeah, but I get you're right, and it is. I suppose it's hard, like the natural way for any champion. But I wonder again, is this year a little different because of the break that everybody's had, and there's a bit more life when you come back. Then you're not just going through the motions; you're just springing back into a championship. You might just be lucky this year that this is a chance to
maybe it is. Yeah, you're right on that. So the Kerry County Finals on this weekend, they're the ones on television. Other matches to look out for, lads, are the Kerry County Final, Mid Kerry versus East Kerry. To be honest, I don't have as much interest in two area teams playing each other. It just doesn't have that same draw for me as if a club was potentially playing one of them or two clubs. I don't know if the two of you feel that way. Just, I don't know. What do we know about Mead and East Kerry as much as anything else, other than David Clifford, you know, who's absolutely outstanding. The Tipperary County Finals on, Clonmel Commercials versus Loughmore Castellini. How the Loughmore Castellini lads are going to lift themselves after that heartbreak of last week. My God. And like, I mean, to have to play Clonmel Commercials, who are a very, very good club team, it's going to be a big ask for Loughmore Castellini. In that one, the other county final that I saw was Edirne St. Joseph's versus Derrygonnelly Harps. Derrygonnelly Harps going for 6 or 7 in a row. So that's the one in Fermanagh. So yeah, again, loads of county finals this weekend, lads. Loads to look forward to. The Connor, before you go, the Knockmore Briefy county final. Not a classic by any means, but Knockmore back on top. What are Briefy thinking at this stage?
Probably something similar to
ourselves.
They've lost 4 finals since 2013. We've lost 3 finals since 2016.
Jesus.
And then there was another, there's a replay in there as well. So we've been involved in 4 or 5 and haven't won any of them. So I imagine they're the same. I'd say there's a few lads from our team thinking on Monday, geez, maybe we'll go for the Brayfield lads. We commiserate together. We're all in the same boat.
So Kilchy Mott the Mayo of intermediate football in Mayo?
You know, I think it was my dad that said that to me. Saturday night, and I'd never thought of it like that before now. So
he said it to you Saturday night after the match. Jeez, he could have waited till Sunday. Surely I've waited till the following Thursday.
I was thinking he might as well, but he's not one to So I appreciate that hard talk, Willie. Like a lot of people, maybe shy away.
I do. I definitely do. Yeah.
Sooner rather than later.
You boys would want to wake up now and get back next year. You're the Mayo now with Mayo football at this stage.
Pretty much. Just on I think I did say before Sunday night that that team has been, like, you know, it's been freshened up every now and again, but a lot of that team has been around since that 2013 loss as well. So that might have been, considering that Castlebar were out of the radar this year, Ballinara are getting better, Westport are getting better. That might have been Brafey's last, our best chance for all.
Right, right. It seemed by the way the players were on the ground after the match that they probably knew that as well. Right, lads, we'll leave it there. We'll be back on Monday and we'll review all the matches at the weekend as usual. So we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go. And so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.